Good morning, AWS, and welcome to the inaugural episode of AWS Morning Brief, where I gather the news from AWS. I contextualize it through a lens of why it matters to the market, and then I make fun of it. I'm your host, cloud economist Corey Quinn. This show focuses on a longer list of AWS service and feature releases than generally makes the last week in AWS newsletter, and then it lets me go off script a little bit more. Strap in, but first, this episode is sponsored by AWS themselves, specifically their upcoming Reinforce conference. This is the premier and so far only cloud security conference named after an email subject line, and it's coming to Boston on June 25th and 26th. In a truly horrifying turn of events, I'm giving half of a track keynote. More to come on that in the coming weeks. If you care about cloud security, I'm going to stop there. You don't care about cloud security. No one cares about cloud security until it's too late. Maybe just once, try caring about it before you're desperately wishing that you had. Just give it a try. There are tracks for every skill level. There's a security jam, a new capture the flag event, and later in this show, I'll give you a discount code that knocks some money off of registration. I'm going to be there. You should too. Now, what happened last week in AWS? Amazon Aurora with Postgres compatibility supports database activity streams for real-time monitoring. Awesome. Vaguely, we sort of remember, that's right, Aurora does have a Postgres or PostgreSQL or however you want to pronounce it, PostgreSQL maybe. Don't email me, I don't care. That same service, Aurora with Postgres compatibility, now supports PostgreSQL 10.7. I'm sure there are some folks cheering about that in the database world, but I've got to be honest with you, I would struggle to care about that less than I already do. Moving on a bit, Amazon Chime's voice connector now supports United States toll-free numbers, which is just awesome. A service you almost certainly don't use solves for your long-distance bills, which is a problem you haven't thought about for a decade. Not only are they fighting the last war, they're intent on winning it. Speaking of truly depressing stories, Amazon DynamoDB now supports FIPS 140-2 validated endpoints in the Canada Central region. Right. Amazon's EBS adds the ability to take point-in-time, crash-consistent snapshots across multiple EBS volumes, which raises my initial response to be, what the hell was it doing before? Because at first, wait, you mean it would just crash inconsistently? Well, sort of. It turns out that when you're trying to get better performance out of EBS volumes, what people have done historically and still can do is stripe across multiple volumes in a RAID-style array. Now you can snapshot those without having to quiesce anything that's actively writing to that at the time, which historically has been a big problem. That makes a lot more sense in my initial knee-jerk reaction. It also turns out, in other news, that Amazon Elasticsearch Service now supports SQL querying. Which is great, because when the only tool that you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a DBA. Consider maybe retooling or restaffing, as the case may be. Amazon Pinpoint, a service I swear I'm not making up, announces a major update to their deliverability dashboard. That's a service that does large-scale email systems, something that I tend to have a bit of interest in. And this is neat. It tells you what your deliverability looks like, how much is hitting the inbox, how much isn't. And I have to say, its pricing model is Looney Tunes. It's $1,250 per month, flat rate, regardless of volume. So for an awful lot of people, that is either comically high or comically low. And it's one of the very few AWS services that is flat rate priced. Almost everything scales up or down with usage. I don't understand what this is targeting, and it feels like it's a very narrow band. Route 53, the DNS service, has launched private DNS and health checks 5 years ago. This year, they've launched it in AWS GovCloud, which is awesome because a lot of services there are themselves 5 years in the past. That's not entirely to blame on AWS. It's very, very difficult with that level of regulation and control to get service releases out. So for the folks who are doing things in public sector, who have workloads in GovCloud, this is transformative. For the rest of us, it feels like we are sort of recapturing our lost youth through a sense of nostalgia. In a more modern sense for most people, they announced a service last year at reInvent called Textract, which as of now is generally available. It's fantastic and it does OCR. And yes, that's great. Listen, folks, the new version came out this week for Microsoft Excel on iOS. I'm not kidding. It can take a picture of a chart and import it into an Excel spreadsheet. That is fantastic and transformative for an awful lot of business. And why am I talking about this in the context of an AWS release, given that it's a Microsoft product and has no bearing? Terrific question. This is a small taste for AWS of what every company who releases a product during reInvent feels. They announce something and it gets completely lost. Welcome to the other side. This is how the other half lives. That said, if you don't work for AWS and you have a product release that you're planning for reInvent and you don't work at AWS, maybe consider moving that launch date to any other week. The only thing you should be announcing during that week is a data breach or anything else you don't want to see ever go public. Amazon Transcribe now supports speech-to-text in modern standard Arabic, which is cool, I guess, but I mean, who really speaks Arabic? Oh, that's right. 500 million people. This is huge. Amazon Aurora Serverless for MySQL or MySQL or MySQL 5.6 now supports data API. What does that even mean? I'm glad I asked. They announced this during reInvent, where you can have an API layer that stands in front of a database. So you can have things like serverless functions hit that API and concurrency and persistent connections get handled for you, as opposed to having 1,000 Lambda functions immediately try and hug your database to death. Suddenly it squeals in a different way, smells like burning metal, and your site goes down. Some of the early results on this were relatively non-performant, latency was high. A lot of that's been fixed, and some of the challenges that they saw during the developer preview have been resolved. Fortunately, this is exactly why there are things like developer previews, where they can test this in real-world circumstances, see what use cases look like. By all accounts, this is a fascinating and well-built service. I'm looking forward to getting more into it. Amazon ElastiCache for Redis improves cluster availability during planned maintenance. Finally, so this one hit me so hard 4 years ago that I still wake up in the night sweating. There was a maintenance event that caused another issue that was compounded by something else a customer was doing, and it was a all-hands-on-deck emergency for several hours on a weekend in the middle of the night. And I am glad to see that my ticket was finally addressed only 4 short years later. This is something that younger me would have loved. Amazon managed streaming for Apache Kafka, which apparently whoever named that gets paid by the syllable, but also is called Amazon MSK, is now generally available. This is a managed Kafka service, which is awesome. Their billing model's a little Byzantine. There's a per-node instance charge. There's storage on a per-node basis, which is all added together, then divided on an average basis of how many hours all those things ran for, divided by the number of hours in a month, and it is incomprehensible. It feels almost Kafka-esque, a reference for which I refuse to apologize. You now can do tag-based access control for AWS CloudFormation, which is fascinating and terrifying. It opens up a few interesting use cases, but I can't shake the feeling that it also exposes different ways to inadvertently grant more permissions than you thought you would if you don't thoroughly understand exactly how IAM works in relation to tags and the consequences thereof. Before you sit there feeling guilty, that's everyone. No one fully understands IAM. Even people who work on the system don't like being asked direct questions or, to be very honest, the bright light of day. They tend to prefer the dark. And if you also throw garlic at them, they hiss and recoil. AWS Code Commit, which is GitHub except without customers, now is available again in GovCloud in the US East region. which is kind of awesome. If you are going all in on AWS, it's sort of the right move. One of the biggest challenges in regulated environments across the board is getting a vendor approved. Once you are running something on AWS, having additional services is more or less just a blanket approval. Getting an entire separate company and vendor involved is like pulling teeth. This is transformative for companies who find themselves in that situation. AWS DataSync now supports EFS to EFS transfer. I just want to say that it sounds like a website for plumbers who are very lonely. Are you a lonely plumber? DataSync. What I don't understand fully is that DataSync does data replication and copying between a source and a destination. It's not quite clear to me whether there's an intermediary instance that it copies things into, whether it has to effectively go direct from source to target with nothing intermediary. The documentation was unclear. I spent about 15 minutes digging into this and couldn't get an answer. If you know the answer to that, please reach out and let me know. I'd love to get your perspective. AWS IoT Analytics now supports channel and data stores in your own Amazon S3 buckets. I'm going to ignore that for a second and focus on IoT Analytics itself. It's an absolutely wonderful service that you've never even thought about because you don't run IoT devices. Why would you? You're running a business, not building mobile attack platforms to sell to rich people on the back of a VC investment. IoT Analytics is a great analytics service that's unfortunately fallen victim to AWS marketing. Right now, they're listening to me say that and saying, you know, Corey's right. We should add 8 more syllables to that product name. Wrong direction. In the same vein, AWS IoT Things Graph is now generally available. Let's expand that acronym. That means that AWS Internet of Things Things Graph is the latest Amazon Web Services service to launch. On a slightly more serious note, I just mentioned this, my biggest frustration with the IoT as an AWS umbrella brand maneuver is that there are truly transformative services under that umbrella that people completely ignore simply because they're not running IoT devices, so they think it doesn't apply to them. That's unfortunate. The AWS Storage Gateway service has added the capability to move virtual tapes from Amazon S3 Glacier to Amazon S3 Glacier Deep Archive, and that's being trumpeted as a giant win, but lifecycle policies. You've enabled lifecycle policies and turned a critical missing feature from the GA launch to something you can trumpet as a net new feature enhancement and increment the annual service releases by 1. I see you, Amazon. The AWS Transit Gateway is now available in the South America, Sao Paulo region, which is going to be super awesome for the single most expensive region on the planet from a data transfer cost perspective. If you're doing anything that involves networking in the Sao Paulo region, consider doing almost literally anything else. This salient point is brought to you by Telecom Monopolies. I kid. This podcast has been sponsored by AWS, specifically their upcoming Reinforce conference. At the beginning of the show, I told you I'd be giving you a discount code, and here it is, RFSAL19. That's Romeo Foxtrot Sierra Alpha Lima 19er. Why should you use that code? Because security is always an afterthought until it's too late. Right now, it's not too late. There are going to be talks at this conference for a whole bunch of different users. Business executives, C-suite executives, C-level executives bobbing in the ocean, individual contributors who work in InfoSec, various specialty areas, and so on. There are going to be hundreds of sessions from leading experts in the field and also me. Once again, that code is RFSAL19. And if you use it, please ping me and let me know. I'm planning something fun. Now, in the exact opposite vein of fun, you can enable EC2 hibernation without specifying encryption intent at every instance launch. I had to dig into this. If you wanted to hibernate an EC2 instance, you had to specify whether or not it was going to be encrypted at the launch, alter AMIs accordingly, and yes, they are pronounced AMI, and jump through a whole bunch of hoops. So this enhancement is great news because the horrible thing you didn't know was a thing is now no longer a thing. You're welcome. I appreciate the messaging. I appreciate the enhancement and regret the necessity for it. They've also launched fraud detection using machine learning, which means they can use machine learning to detect frauds, which means they're about to uncover that I have been... Oh, wait. They're not onto me in that sense. They're talking about a different kind of fraud, payment-style fraud. Never mind. I don't normally talk about AWS Quick Starts, which is click button and spin up a thing, but they have one now that deploys AWS Cloud9. That's all it does. Whenever I see a Quick Start that claims to simply set up an existing AWS service, I sort of instinctively know that setting up that service contains multitudes of dragons. I started looking, and it kind of does for what this Quick Start's aimed at, namely enterprise deployments with HA and compliance concerns. For those of us playing around in a test account, it doesn't. There's a big customer study where the Volkswagen Group Research has worked with Altair and uses NVIDIA technology on AWS to accelerate aerodynamic concept design. That's right, they're using machine learning to wind up solving interesting stuff. It's huge for them. This is incredible technology. Previously, they could only lie to one or two emissions regulators per quarter, but with the power of machine learning on AWS, they can now lie to many times that number of regulators in less than half the time. Good for them and good pick on a customer story to tell. The AWS security blog has an interesting post on AWS and the Cloud Act. That's cloud in all caps. Whenever an AWS blog weighs in on a federal law, you know you're in for a heck of a read that probably took months of workshopping to make sure it hit exactly the tone they want. And credit where due, they nailed it. This is a fascinating story. And lastly, you can simplify DNS management in a multi-account environment with the Route 53 Resolver. That's right. We can simplify DNS management just as my father did and his father before him. Once again, I'm Corey Quinn, cloud economist at the Duckbill Group. This is the AWS Morning Brief, gathering the news from AWS, contextualizing it through a lens of why it matters to the market, and then making fun of it. Thank you for listening. Thank you to AWS both for sponsoring this episode as well as giving me ample comedic fodder, and I will talk to you next week. Smash that subscribe button!
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.